Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Look out, there's only films to be buried with. Hello, and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a leaf blower, and I love film. As Robert Thiers said, knowledge is power, is time, is money, is popcorn, is movies, is heartache, is love, is feels good now, is AMC Cinemas. Yep. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Kevin Smith, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, and even Cred Plambles. But this week, it is the brilliant and amazing and wonderful actor, Paul Walter Hauser. Get over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes of chat, laughs, secrets. We talk about beginnings and endings. There's all sorts of stuff there with Paul. You can get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Paul Walter Hauser, he is a brilliant actor. You know him from Richard Jewell. You know him from one of my all-time favourite shows, I Think You Should Leave. You know him from Cruella. And you know him from the brilliant Blackbird, which is on Apple TV, which he's in with Taron Egerton. It's fucking brilliant. They're all going to win Emmys. It's amazing. He's fantastic. I met him very recently. Turns out he's fucking funny as well. What a treat. So I was very excited to record this with him. We did it over Zoom. Lovely time. I think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 226 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by an award-winning actor, a writer, a sketch-co, a stand-up, a film star, a TV star, a man with such range, he can play anything, anywhere, at any time. He's a myth, he's a legend, and he's a great, and he's here with a bowl of cereal. Please welcome to the show, your favourite and mine. I can't believe he's here. He's here right now. He's about to pour the milk in his cereal. It's Paul Walter Hauser!
What a generous, this is a giant bowl of cereal.
That's huge. I couldn't work out if it was visually looked bigger than it is because it's nearer me.
No, it's the size of a toddler's torso.
Right.
Thank you for having me, man. This is so fun. I love movies. The few times I've met you, I love talking to you. So this is very easy for me. Movies and you.
I'm very excited to talk with you more. We met a couple of times. You're a right bloody laugh. You are. The thing that I just found out, which I didn't know about you, and now it's all I want to talk about, although we can talk about what a serious, brilliant actor you are, is you do stand-up or you did stand-up? On your Wikipedia, it says started stand-up at 16. Tell me everything.
I started doing stand-up comedy at 16, and I would say about 3 to 4 years ago, I kind of let it go. I really stopped doing it about 4 years ago. And I just never broke in. I just kept doing bringer shows where you got to bring all these people. And by the way, I have a ton of friends, and my film credits would also help me get film or TV credits would help me get some people there. But like nobody ever invited me to like be on a showcase where I get 10 minutes with five other highly respected comics. Like that just never happened. So I kind of stopped doing it. But I loved doing it when I did do it. And I kind of went from, I think the first 7 years, it was me trying to sound like somebody else. And right. then like 8 or 9 years in, I really hit a stride of like, this is who I actually am. I'm able to talk to people the way I would with my friends. And
yeah,
and that was really fun. You know, I did the Comedy Store. What's the place in Santa Monica? My brain is fried from years of smoking weed. The cafe, Formosa Cafe, the Comedy right. Store, Meltdown Comics. Like there were places in LA that I would frequent and hit, but I feel like a place like the Comedy Store, you kind of have to like be their slave for 7 to 10 years to like become one of them, which I wasn't really willing to do, you know?
If I said to you, I'm doing a gig, come and do 10 minutes, would you come?
100%.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're kind of a bit more, here's my hot take on you. You're sort of, if we had to put you in one category, I think most people know you as a very serious, very gifted, talented actor who does very serious dramas. But I met you and 2 seconds in, I was like, oh, he's fucking funny. And also, you're in my favorite comedy show of all time. I think you should leave. And I think that's the most fun you've ever had.
I'm obsessed with Tim Robinson. I think he's so funny. When I met him, though, even when I worked with him, he was so kind of withdrawn and shy. And I think it was genuine. I don't think it was anything bad. I think he kind of seems to save his crazy either for performing, writing, or maybe his close personal relationships. But I just like meeting and working with Tim for me was like how a dramatic actor might feel about getting to work with like Ang Lee. It was a big deal for me.
Oh, man. It's one of the best sketches. Your one. That's a fucking phenomenal show. The best.
Anytime I'm depressed, I was having a really bad day doing press, which is a first world sentence if I've ever heard one. But I was having an emotional sort of broken roller coaster moment. And I just stopped in the middle of the hair and makeup stuff. And I go, I need a minute. I just have to watch this. And I played a sketch from I Think You Should Leave. I did the Detective Crashmore trailer and then him talking at the junket thing. And like immediately, I don't know if it was 0 to 60, but like I went from 0 to 40 within 5 minutes of watching Tim Robinson, you know.
It's wonderful. It's really, really wonderful. Little Buff Boys is maybe my favorite thing of all time. I can't get over Little Buff Boys.
I don't know him. No, don't pick him. He can't win. Don't pick him.
Anyway, the point is this. So when you did Blackbird, which is an excellent show, and you did it with the excellent Taron Egerton, and you're both excellent together. So I genuinely would be curious to know, I'm assuming you're playing a very intense, for those who haven't seen it, you're essentially a possible paedophile serial killer. And it's not the most fun. It's very, very intense. You have lots of very brilliant, intense conversations with each other. And you seem fun. He seems fun in real life. Did you have fun? Or were you very like between takes? Are you laughing? Are you messing around? Or was it very like focused and moody? Like what was it actually like to make?
It depended on the day, man. As you well know, some days are lighter than others. You're an actor. Mm-hmm. So it's like if one of us had a monologue or we had to do say something particularly gruesome, we would kind of keep our distance and just make it about the work and not go method where it's like, I can't talk to anybody. I don't give me the cheese sandwich. Like it wasn't like that. It was just us being withdrawn into focus. But I would say out of if there are 5 shooting days in a week, I would say 3 of them were spent cracking jokes or taking selfies or talking about movies versus the other 2 where we were a little more focused in. By the way, Taron is really funny. Yeah. And he's got kind of a smart wit where mine can be a bit buffoonish. He's got a smart wit and he's a great singer. And, you know, we really had a lot of fun, especially when we're off camera.
What was it like with the other prisoners? You're all there all the time. Did you all become one big gang or did you never speak to the other prisoners?
I always talk to the background actors. I never make them feel less than. I'm always taking selfies. One guy I got his address and sent his kids a Cobra Kai picture and autograph. Like I try to crack a few jokes and chat with them and ask them, what else have you been doing? Have you ever done theater? Or have you ever gotten a speaking part? But I also don't over engage because sometimes if you over engage, then they're like, I'm going to send you a script I wrote. And I'm like,
yeah,
no, I'm going to fake COVID and SARS and keep you away from me. And that's not because I hate on them. It's because, dude, life is short. Time is valuable. And I can't even get my own shit made when I have like famous people attached to my movies and TV stuff. So if I can't get mine made, I'm probably not going to get Ricky from New Orleans, who did 5 days on, you know, fucking Blackbird.
Do you have stuff you've written?
I've written 21 features since I was 16 years old. I've written five or six original TV pilots, and I've written probably 25, 30 sketches.
And how many of these have been made? Zero. That is astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks, but also, like, I'm in it for the long haul at this point. I'm not going to quit my job with six children, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to keep fucking going. I also just love it. I love writing, and I feel like someday I'm going to wake up and God's just going to throw a crazy blessing in my lap and it'll all be worth it in some really cool way.
The thing is, at some point, one thing you do will get made, and then the people will be like, have you got anything else? And you'll come in with a fucking truck full of scripts and go, oh, I got fucking something else. You fucking late coming shits.
Well, here's the thing, too, is like some of them are terrible because I wrote them when I was, you know, 20, 22 years old. But but I would say reasonably, there's probably one pilot and two or three features that are really good that are just kind of like waiting for someone to give a damn or give a budget, which is giving a damn. I became buddies with Mark Duplass. He and I are talking about trying to do like a really low budget thing together. That we can just get made with friends, and like everybody who participates does it for scale, and then they get like 5% back end, and we all share in the profit, you know?
Great. I like that. Paul, I forgotten to tell you something that I should have probably said at the top. You've died. You're dead. You're a dead man. You're dead. Dead. You're dead. Yeah. How did you die? Yeah, let's take a moment.
Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's just when you die, you don't know you're dead, right? Because you're still, you're
eating
in it.
Cereal.
And you're eating cereal.
Don't give me those MBIs.
Don't give me those MBIs. That's so fucking funny. I die. I mean, do you want it to be painful or quick? I have an option for both.
It's entirely your choice. Like, this is how you either think you're going to die or would like to die. So let's hit both and we can make a decision.
My thought is I'm either dying in my sleep at 93, no pain, basically an immediate transition from a dream about heaven to the actuality of heaven.
Wow.
Or I die from tackling a mass shooter off of a balcony of a hotel.
Wow.
Everybody's like, Hauser, Hauser died at 51, but he tackled a mass shooter and they both fell 32 stories down to their death.
Wow.
That'd be dope.
That's pretty good.
Mass shooters aren't dope. I mean, killing one would be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And killing one without using a gun would also be really great. It would feel like really like you made quite a profound point there. Do you know what I mean?
Some real diehard shit.
Yeah. 51, you say. Do you think that's enough? Do you think you've had it by then?
It's not enough, but that's the idea of heroics. There's a sacrifice to be made. You die at 93 in your sleep. It's not much of a sacrifice. It's pretty cush.
Well, I don't believe in the peaceful dying in your sleep. I think there might be loads of pain. You just don't know because they were, you know, they died.
True.
You know, no one ever goes, oh, I died peacefully. It might look like it, but they might be screaming on the inside. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, probably. Yeah, for sure.
So I'd go with the tackling the mass shooter. Do you worry about death?
Yes and no. I'm a bit ambidextrous with my feelings on death in the sense that I really do believe in God and heaven, and I've already lived a really charmed existence, and I've been very spoiled in friendships and creative work and the fact that I'm healthy even though I'm overweight. Like, there's a billion reasons to be grateful. But yeah, I feel like I've been given a lot, and I genuinely feel like something good will happen when I die. Having said that, every time I act like I'm willy-nilly and super cool about dying, for every moment I say that, there's always another moment where, you know, I get a headache and suddenly feel woozy. Like there was a moment, Brett, back like 5 years ago, I accidentally took a muscle relaxer with like a hard cider or a beer.
Right.
And I called my buddy who's a doctor, my buddy Chris Arcangeli. I immediately called him because I didn't know what was wrong with me. And then I realized, oh, shit, I wasn't thinking. And I called my buddy Chris. I go, I feel really messed up. Here's what happened. And he said to me, he goes, how many did you take? I said, like one muscle relaxer and like one beer or cider. And he goes, how do you feel? I go, I feel like I'm getting a lap dance from a demon. And he said to me, he goes, Paul, there are senior citizens, elderly folks who take 2-3 muscle relaxers a day with a menu of cocktails throughout the day. He's like, you're an idiot. You made a little mistake. You're going to be fine. You don't have to call an ambulance. Because I was literally ready to call an ambulance.
Shit.
So it's just funny how I try to play a tough guy and I'm like, I believe in God. Everything's cool. But like, I definitely flip out on occasion when I realize, oh, I could die, or do I think I'm going to? It's a little bit of a dishonest amount of confidence I have, you know.
But you think there's a heaven?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Gun to my head.
Yeah.
I also think a lot more people are there than people think. I think it's a very inclusive place.
Open door policy. Do you think everyone's allowed in?
I think it's like open door in the sense of like, even if you don't believe in God while you're alive, like, who's to say that the mercy of God doesn't allow people in their final moment of breathing or death where God's just like, yo, I know shit was fucked up with your dad and he abused you. I know the people at the church you went to were really judgmental and you stopped believing in me. But like, I am not my followers. I'm greater than them. They're broken too. I love you. You want to come hang out? And then like, we don't know. But I was a betting man, I bet that God's love is unknowably boundless. That was what I would bet on.
I love it. Can I ask the difficult question then? Is Hitler going in? Hitler in heaven? God says, even you, son, come on in.
Is Hitler in heaven? Once again, if I were to bet, I would say no, because I think he was bent on destruction. And I think there's a difference between being bent on hate and destruction or being a product of hate and destruction. I think most of us are products. I think the ones that stick out are the ones who are orchestrating and constructing and planning and doing. So I have a great, great amount of mercy for the vast majority of people, but the ones at the very top who have the most money, who pretend to care about people and who all forever alter the shape of existence and the quality of life for many, those are the ones that I go, well, they're probably going to fucking hell.
And so you think there's a hell as well?
Yeah, that's kind of the Christian thing. You kind of buy into both.
I love it. Well, listen up, buddy boy. You're right. There is a heaven. It's true. It's all true. You're welcome. And it's busy. You're right. It's pretty busy. It's a little, dare I say, it's a little crowded. You're like, I thought there'd be a bit more space. This is heaven. It's lovely. But occasionally you're like, you're sighing a bit because people everywhere. But it is filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
Puppies and babies.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, there's puppies and babies everywhere.
Fuck yeah, I'm into it.
You said it was crowded. It's crowded with puppies and babies climbing over each other, jumping around, wanting your attention. It's great. They're delighted to see you, but they want to talk to you about your life through film. Wow. Can you imagine? Isn't that weird? Puppies and babies.
I buy it.
The first thing to ask you is what's the first film you ever saw? Paul Walterhauser, star of TV and film.
I would say to the pug and the 1-year-old, do you mean in theaters or just in general?
I think they'd go, you know what? Let's hear both.
Yeah. So in the theater, I think it was Home Alone. Ooh. I believe Home Alone in 1990, I was 4 years old and I saw it in a movie theater back when you could smoke cigarettes in a movie theater.
Wicked.
So there was a guy smoking a cigarette. There was another guy drinking a glass of beer. It was like a movie theater owned by mobsters or some shit. It was pretty archaic, you know? And then as far as the first film I remember seeing, if I were to venture a guess, I would imagine it was like The Little Mermaid or something. It was probably an animated film at age 2 or 3.
Did you go to the cinema with family? Do you have siblings and stuff? Who took you when you were 4?
I did. Me and all my siblings went. I don't even know if my little sister Elise went. She would have been 2. But maybe
how many
did.
Of you are there?
I'm 1 of 4. Older brother Matthew, older sister Julia, myself, and my younger sister Elise. and our babysitter took us to Home Alone. And my mom was super pissed because it became the family's like favorite movie. And she's like, I should have been the one to take you guys to Home Alone. She was really bummed.
Do you remember thinking, oh, I want a bit of that when you went to the cinema? Did you think I'd love to be in this shit?
100%. 100%. Right. What is this magic thing where I get to partake in somebody's story and be entertained? And then it becomes a craving where you crave stories, you know?
Yeah.
That was my indoctrination of that. And yeah, I mean, my big takeaway, Macaulay Culkin was not my favorite person in the movie. Even as a child, my favorite person was Daniel Stern, who of course plays Marv in Home Alone.
Yeah. And
I got him tattooed on my arm with a bunch of other guys. These are my childhood comedy heroes.
Right. I'm reading this for the audio listeners. Short and Stern and Farley and Varney and Carey and Williams. Wow.
Do you know them all?
And, well, Martin Short.
Yeah.
Daniel Stern.
Yep.
Chris Farley. Varney, is that Ernie? Ernie Goes to Camp.
Ernest. Yeah, Jim Varney.
Jim Varney, yeah. Wow. Jim Carrey and Montel Williams?
No, Vanessa.
Okay.
Vanessa Williams. No, I'm kidding. Serena. I think Robin's the GOAT. I think Robin's the number one comedy drama actor of all time.
Yeah.
Nobody did it at the height of like the Fisher King, Dead Poets Society, Good Will Hunting, One Hour Photo, and then Mrs. Doubtfire, Mork and Mindy, Aladdin, Hook, which I know I'm not supposed to talk about because everybody talks about it. But
I love Hook. We can talk about it. It's been a while.
But dude, Robin Williams is the G. He's the number one.
Great shout. What is the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love being scared. Not as a child, though. I mean, the film that scared me the most was the miniseries of It with Tim Curry. I caught like 5 minutes of the film. I crept into the living room while my dad and older brother were watching it. And I caught the scene in the beginning where he's in the drain and he's inviting the kid to come join him. And then his mouth turns into a giant like yellow fangs. I really kid you not. That messed me up for about a year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
I was so afraid of Tim Curry as the clown in It that it went from me not being able to sleep at night and like praying to God being afraid. And about a year in, I just started talking to It, the clown. I talked to it to try to take the power away from it.
Wow.
So I would act like I was undisturbed or undeterred by it, by its presence, and would talk to it just so that I could then go to sleep. And I'm telling you, this is the mind of a 7, 8, maybe 9-year-old at the most. I never heard anything back, but I would talk to it as if to say, like, I'm not afraid of you because right. I'm making conversation with you. But like, I think that's pretty fucking astute for an 8-year-old. Do you know what I mean?
So you'd be like, hey, It, I'm going to sleep now. I know you're in here, but I'm not scared of you. So I'm just going to go sleep. Night, night.
Something like that, combined with telling him what I did that day, like how my day was. Like
he was like your pen pal.
I mean, let's call it what it really is. It's Stockholm Syndrome.
Hey, It.
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, had nice dinner today. How was your day, It? Never answered back.
Had a bit of beef and potatoes. And I would make love to It. No, I'm kidding. I won't take it that far. That movie scared the holy shit out of me. And I would say as an adult, the film that disturbed me the most was Ari Aster's film Hereditary.
Me too.
I walked out with 2 minutes to go. Something in my so you know when you have to throw up and you feel the warm spit come up in your mouth?
Yeah.
And your stomach changes. It's like a temperature change in your body.
Yeah.
I had that moment. This has never happened to me since or before. I had that moment watching Hereditary where and spoiler alert, if those are listening who want to see the film, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. But as the sort of spirit ghost body flies into that like treehouse where they're bent down and they're worshiping mock idols of Christ, something in my body literally turned up like a stovetop, and I walked out of the theater like I was gonna fight somebody. I was like, my spirit had been disrupted, not even my mind, my spirit. And I stood up and I walked out of the film and never saw the full ending.
Wow.
And I just assume that's because I'm a Jesus guy. I believe that all people can easily have this Holy Spirit in them if they believe in God. And he was being openly mocked at the end of this film, and it was really dark. They were naked, bent down. And I was like, I'm fucking not into it. Not into it. And I say that, by the way, I say that with no judgment on Ari Aster. I think he's a brilliant filmmaker.
Yeah.
And he made what he wanted to make, and it was very effective, but not for me.
Oh, man, that film gave me proper nightmare. Like, that fucked me up, that film, for a solid week. It's really...
Me too.
Really fucked me up. That's the most scared I've been.
Me and my friends really, we were very negatively affected by it for, weeks after. We were all talking about it.
Yeah, interesting. What about crying? What's the film that made you cry the most? Do you cry a lot? Are you a crier?
I'm a big crier. I'm the biggest wuss ever. It's a Wonderful Life consistently makes me cry. Like, I've seen it 30 times, but somehow I cry at the same parts every time. Kind of unprovoked. Yeah. It's not like I'm getting ready to cry. It's like it just has the effect, you know? It's like I'm cutting onions all of a sudden. Sorry, you don't say onions there, right? Scallions? What are they? What do you call them?
Carrots. We call them carrots.
Carrots. Listen, carrots, courgettes, rocket. I mean, I know.
You get it. You fit right in.
Oh, fit right in, shepherd's fucking pie. You know what movie made me cry to the degree that I was almost worried about myself?
What was that?
I saw Interstellar in theaters, the Chris Nolan movie.
Yeah, that.
And the scene where he—spoiler! If, by the way, anybody who's listening to this, you're a movie fan, assumedly, watch these fucking movies. Interstellar has a scene where McConaughey is a little mini ghost in a bookshelf from another dimension, calling out to his daughter, played by Jessica Chastain, and I wept. And once again, similar to the Ari Aster thing, I wept suddenly. It was just a sudden thing that shifted. And the only thing I can equate it to is I told my buddy at the time in the theater sitting next to me, looking at me like, the fuck? I equate it to this. I felt like I was seeing something that I wasn't supposed to be seeing.
Oh, really?
It felt like some bigger, grander secret truth that was being exposed to the masses. And I don't know why I felt that way, or I haven't unpacked it. I'd have to rewatch it and kind of emotionally, mentally unpack it. But that really got to me. I wept pretty hard.
Wow. And that's not even the scene. The scene I would assume you're talking about is when he's watching the video of her, of all the years he's missed.
I didn't cry at that as much as the bookshelf. The bookshelf fucked me up.
Because you saw another dimension you didn't think you were supposed to, because it broke the natural order of things in your head. Is that it?
It's like it broke a spiritual fourth wall. It was really, really strange for me.
Do you watch Twin Peaks?
Never seen the old or the new, which I know is a true blasphemous reality as a movie TV guy, but I do like David Lynch. I've seen a few of his movies.
I think that would ruin you, actually. Maybe you should have.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Stadtsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is the film that you love? Most people don't like it. It is not critically acclaimed, but you love it unconditionally.
easy. I love 1990s family comedies, like for kids and families.
Like Beethoven.
I'm obsessed, seen it 1,000 times, Beethoven and Beethoven Second, which is a little edgy, where Rice, Charles Grodin and Bonnie Hunt's daughter, almost gets raped in Beethoven Second. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
She's at a house party on vacation.
That's not what I remember. I remember puppies.
No, well, rewatch Beethoven Second. it should have been rated R. I love Cop and a Half with Burt Reynolds.
Yes.
Have you seen Top and a Half?
Yes, I have.
Dude, it's so funny. That kid, Norman D. Golden III, the kid Sweet playing kid. Opposite Burt Reynolds, incredible. I love Three Ninjas. Have you seen Three Ninjas?
Yes, Three Ninjas.
Rocky Loves Emily. And another one is House Guest with Sinbad and Phil Hartman. House Guest?
Fuck, yes, House Guest.
So good. So funny. Sinbad wore the crown, man. Sinbad had the crown for a couple years. He was like one of the funniest dudes going, and then it kind of fizzled.
I heard that Sinbad, who I never seen live, would do entirely improvised stand-up every single time. That was the word on the street. Sinbad don't need scripts.
One of my favorite stand-up specials of all time is Sinbad's, I think it's called Brain Dead. It's incredible.
Is it improvised, incredible. Do you think? Or did he write it?
I think he wrote it, but I'm sure he riffs during it. There's some stuff that you know is rehearsed just watching it. He does like a musical number to some Motown song, and it's like, it feels more like sketch comedy than stand-up, which is kind of what I relate to.
Right. What about a film that you used to love, but you've watched recently and you've gone, oh no, I don't like this anymore? For whatever reason that could be.
The Pinocchio animated film from 1940, the original Pinocchio.
To Disney?
Yeah.
Go on, because it's creepy as fuck.
Yeah, it plays like a child trafficking manual. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I don't know how it's a family film. There's also just like in general, like there's something very weird about all the parents being dead in kids' animated films at Disney. I just find it very bizarre. Like I would like to know what. Because if something is done too many times, you just start to wonder, like, these people have to be aware of it. Like, why is that a consistent thing, you know?
Hmm.
Not as much anymore, but it was for a time, I think.
I think that's like all fairy tales, though. And all fairy tales is the parents are dead. I think it's
a lot of them. That's true.
Could maybe because it makes the kid have to go and do something because no one's looking after
him. Makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Pinocchio, you know. There's a lot of Disney animated films I love. I love Robin Hood. I think it's from the 70s, the Robin Hood one. I love it. I love Beauty and the Beast. There's a lot of great ones, but Pinocchio's kind of fucked up. Pinocchio's weird.
What's
like I got like, I'll give you an example of how deep my conviction is on this film.
Okay.
I got an audition to do the voice of Jiminy Cricket for the new Pinocchio movie with Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And I didn't do the audition. I just didn't do it. I was like, this something feels fucked up. I just didn't do it. Yeah.
I don't want part of your trafficking manual. I will say for the record, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, which I believe is now on Netflix, is fucking phenomenal. 5 stars.
That doesn't surprise me. I wanted to take my nieces and nephews to that in theaters, but we all got sick with people were having COVID and flus and colds and... Became a real nasty affair at the Hauser house on Thanksgiving. A lot of sickies.
That sounds gross. What is the what is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing the film will always make it special to you, Paul Walter Hauser. What's that?
I would say the remake of The Lion King from 2020. That was movie my wife and I saw on our first date.
No way.
Yahweh.
That's nice.
It was very nice. Very nice. That we went and saw it at the Midtown Arts Cinema in Atlanta, Georgia, while I was shooting Richard Jewell, the Eastwood thing I did. So that will forever be a very important film. And I love the original, the cartoon, which is technically better than the live action. But, you know, it's still a good movie.
You weren't dating then?
Yeah.
Did you kiss that day on the first date?
No. No, I really deemed her to be a pretty conservative woman in some regard. And she was in the dating sense of like, hey, I'm not just going to, you know, go home with you type of thing. I did put my arm around her at one point, and I definitely bought her a glass of wine at the theater, drinking wine, watching Lion King.
Did you put your arm around her during Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Did you time it? Or was it during a stampede?
No, but I did do the popcorn. I did do the popcorn trick, though.
Okay, that's
bottom
romantic.
Of the bucket. Yeah. I will also say that two experiences that were very important to me film-wise were Children of Men.
Love it.
And Napoleon Dynamite. Love I saw it. Children of Men and Napoleon Dynamite three times each. And I took new people every time I saw it. That's how passionately I felt about those movies. Good Time, the Safdie brother movie.
Oh,
I saw that
yeah.
three times in theaters, and I took new people every time. And like that's kind of the benchmark of whether or not I think a movie's truly extraordinary is if I keep going to see it in theaters with new people.
Can I ask you a question? Maybe you don't answer it. I don't know. If you don't want, we can cut it. How was Clint Eastwood? Was that an easy film? I hear he does two takes, one take. Was it lovely or was it tough, scary?
Can you lovely. Say? Tough and scary because I was starring in a $40 million Warner Brothers biopic directed by Clint Eastwood. That was why it was scary and tough and intimidating. But the actual on-set environment was amazing.
Really? Oh, great.
His crew is like a family. Clint only does like one or two takes. He tries to keep it to one, but his camera operator, Steve Campanelli, who is one of the best in the game, he always tries to push Clint to do another one just for everyone's sake. And he'll say stuff like, hey, boss, I think we can get that pan or that tilt better. Not sure I got that perfectly. That's not, or, you know, blame it on the focus puller. So we'll do another one. But yeah, I love working with Clint. He threw great dinner parties. He was very self-deprecating, very cool. And for whatever reason, he barely knew me, but he had a hunch and he vouched for me to the studio when they wanted a movie star. He said, I want Paul Hauser, which is crazy.
Love that. What is the film you most relate to, Paul Walterhauser?
I'm going to say Waiting for Guffman. Waiting for Guffman from Christopher Guest.
Yes.
Was one of those moments where I watched a movie and I said, this is my exact sense of humor. I love that people are giving committed, straight performances, albeit funny. And that kind of stripped down low budget ensemble thing. Like that's, to me, if I could just make those movies for the rest of my life, I'd be fine. I would love that.
Love it. Here's why people tune in. Here we go. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen, Paul Walterhauser? And is it The Lion King?
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it's, you know, I went back and forth on possibly telling you Collateral, the Michael Mann film from 2004, because the whole time I'm just thinking, are Jamie and Tom going to get it on in the taxi car? And I know I'm not the only one.
Yeah, it's tense. It's tense between
delicious.
Them.
Delicious. Yeah. Tom with his salt and pepper hair, just waiting for him to choke Jamie while mounting him. Crotch
Jamie
to crotch.
Was sweaty and stressed. Tense.
I'm going to say the movie The Mask. I remember seeing The Mask with Jim Carrey when I was probably 10 years old or 9. And Cameron Diaz's performance in the film and how they kind of captured her on screen. I think that was kind of a growing up moment for me of being like, women take care of children, to being like, I want to have sex with a woman. You know what I mean?
That entrance, the one shot, I believe it's a Steadicam or it's a crane that rushes towards Cameron Diaz, goes up her leg, over her body, to her face. She shakes her hair. I'd say that's the defining moment in half the world. In half the population of the world, that image, that shot, it's seared into our brains forever.
What's crazy is I know what you mean. And and there are going to be people that listen to this who are like, he's being funny. And there are going to be other people that go, no, that, and my grandfather, my dad, me, someday my son will see it. He will be affected in the same way that 9 other generations were.
When you really think about it, it's like, it is powerful. That is a powerful piece of footage. It's very powerful in the same way that seeing something shocking or upsetting might stay with you. That image is in our brains forever.
I think the reason I think it's powerful is not because of what it purely is. You know, really, it's just like, here is a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
But what it is for men is in our psyche at that time, we're going, wow, if I could only be with somebody who looked like that. So it's not even about the image. It's about some weird aspirational thing in which men are like, I want to play the human lottery. You know what I mean? There's something sick there. There's something really sick there.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely not well. Speaking of sick, there's a subcategory, troubling boners, worrying wide-ons. What's the film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should?
Con Air. Put the bunny back in the box. No, that is a very euphemistic phrase. No, Con Air, it's a bunch of dudes who are all like, we're finally out of prison, and instead of getting laid, we're all going to be on this plane together, which is kind of dick-shaped, and we're all excited about freedom, but we're not really experiencing it yet. This is kind of like a prison in the air.
Yeah. And you like men in confined spaces.
I mean, yeah, Reservoir Dogs, that's kind of sexy. We're all wearing suits. We're going to kill each other. Are we part of a team?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll split the diamonds with you. We'll run off together and split the money two ways instead of five. There's an energy there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, tense. You like tension between men in confined spaces. I mean, Blackbird would be on your list if you weren't in it. Maybe it is.
There's a weird sexual energy in Blackbird.
Yeah.
There's a weird, like, funny thing of, like, these guys who are, you know, I think my character, at least, has, like, a weird affection toward Jimmy that, like, starts off, like, you're the bully, I'm the nerd, we're from different tribes. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, oh, we can become friends. And then they start talking about weird stuff with women.
Yeah.
And it's like, it almost becomes this thing of like sharing my perversity. It's like almost weirdly sexually tense in a way.
Yeah. I think that's true. What is objectively the greatest film ever? Objectively. Might not be your favorite, but it's the greatest.
I would probably say Sidney Lumet's and Paddy Chayefsky's Network.
Excellent answer that has, I don't think, ever come up on this podcast. 10 points for you.
Pretty prophetic film.
Yeah, great answer. You've seen that a lot?
Probably twice. It's the kind of film that the first time I saw it, I was just jaw-dropped. Second time I saw it, I was like, whoa, this is as good as I remember. I'm excited for the third.
What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
I mean, Christmas movies are often what I watch the most because it's a yearly watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather go the non-Christmas film and say Dazed and Confused.
Oh, really?
I adore Hangout movies. I'm obsessed with Hangout movies. I love them. Empire Records, American Graffiti, yes. Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Diner. Like, I love Hangout movies.
Love Diner.
Yeah.
Love Diner. What about, don't like to be negative, Paul Waterhouse, so we do it fairly quick. What's the worst film you ever seen?
There is a film that was made, I believe, in South Africa by an independent financier. And the foreign wealthy financier who made this film thought, oh, we're gonna piggyback off the success of E.T. and we're gonna make this this other alien adventure film. And it was called Nuki. I think the most famous people in the film are probably Glynis Johns from Mary Poppins and Steve Railsback. Not a real famous cast, but this movie, Nuki, N-U-K-I-E, is the craziest, worst thing I've ever seen. But also to the degree that, like, I've made so many people watch it with me and just they're laughing 30% of the time. 30% of the time they're laughing and 70% of the time they hate me and they're angry. It's pretty great.
When you went on your first date with your wife, you'd met her before, had you?
No, we met on a dating app called Hinge.
So you met on the app, but so you've been chatting for a bit and then you were like, let's go see Lion King. How much time did you spend together before you went into the cinema?
Well, we had dinner before. I bought her dinner at a Tapas place. Tapas, T-A-P-A-S, not topless.
Thank you.
I bought her dinner at a Tapas place called
Hooters.
Hooters, chicken wings, owls, not breasts. A place called Bulla in Atlanta. It's a really good Tapas place. We had a good meal. She showed up late because she was in traffic. And I think she showed up like 30 minutes late. So we really only had about 45 minutes, I would say, of dinner.
Right.
And then we headed to the theater. I think she just wanted to talk more, but I was hell bent on going to a movie.
You were like, it's the Lion King. Stop talking. It's the Lion King.
Babe, shh. I want to know what happens. It's the same as the animated film. Shh. Shut the fuck up.
If this is going to work, you're not going to talk through films, okay?
Unfortunately, that is kind of a deal breaker with me where, like, I'll give a ratio where it's like, You get to ask a question every 7 or 8 minutes. Whoa. I can do 7 to 8 minutes.
That's you.
But I'm merciful.
I go one, you get one, you get one, you get one. And even that I'm mad about. I'm really mad. And when I answer it, which I will, I'll do it with a death stare.
The worst is when you watch it with somebody's parents or your own parents, because they want to ask a question every 45 seconds. It's like a third grader trying to do the math of a university student. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. It's so bizarre.
It's unacceptable.
It's like they're not even watching it.
I get so mad about that stuff. And I'm just like, well, the reason you're asking questions is because you're not paying attention. So this is so fucking pointless.
Also, sometimes it's really obvious. I don't mind if it's like, who's Kaiser Soze? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. Like, it's different when it's like, what city is that? And it's like, well, there's the Empire State Building, you stupid idiot. That stuff's not.
What is the film that made you laugh the most? You're in comedy. You're very funny. What's your funniest film?
I remember the first time I saw Team America World Police.
Yes.
And the first time I saw Wet Hot American Summer.
Nice.
For my money, those are the two funniest movies I've ever seen.
Really solid. Really solid answers. You can have both of them. Paul Walterhauser, you have been amazing, a joy, a treat. However, when you were 51 years old, there was a mass shooting. Let's say it was about to take place rather than it had happened. No one had been shot yet, but there was a man on the roof. And he had a gun. And you were doing Shakespeare in the Park. You were actually on stage. This was happening. And you were mid Hamlet. You were doing Hamlet at 51. And everyone was like, but you're funny. Why are you doing such a dramatic piece? And you were like, I can make Hamlet funny. And you walk through, you go, hang on a second. You walk through the crowd. And up on a roof is a man with a gun pointed at this crowd. You climb up there. You say, not today, Buster. And you throw yourself at him.
I would say that.
And you grab him and you both fall 31 floors to your death, dead. I'm walking along. People, by the way, clap. They think it might be part of the play, but it's only later they realize, oh, wait, no, that was real. But you're very convincing either way. I'm walking along with a coffin. You know what I'm like? I'm like, what's that mess down there? I come over, I go, oh, bloody hell, it's not Paul Walterhauser, is it? He's not tackled a mass shooter, is he? Blood everywhere. Your body's in absolute state. You've been squished into the ground. I have to get a concrete digger to get some of you out because you've like gone right in the pavement. Anyway, chopping you up, stuff all I can in the coffin. But there's more of you than I was expecting. What with all the concrete and the bits of the other guys on you as well. Anyway, put you in the coffin. It's full. So busy in there, there's really only enough room to slide one DVD into the side of the coffin for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the puppies and babies in heaven when it's your movie night, Mr. Paul Walterhauser?
Ooh, it's tough, but I think I have to go with the short film, The Rope. There's this one performance by this actor. He plays the man tied to the woman, and it is really something. I encourage everyone to find it.
You know what is weird? I was thinking about the short film The Rope this morning because I did, as an actor, for those of you, Paul Walterhauser, obviously just looked on my IMDb. Years and years ago, in the early days, I did a short film called The Rope with like a French art film director. And it's a really beautiful film, except I play the back of a woman is tied to a man and the entire film is on the woman. So I was literally sort of just a stunt man carrying around this woman. And I remember doing an awful lot of acting, but you don't see any of it. You just see my back. And it was like a week, literally the woman's sort of tied on me back to back. And I'm just carrying her like a sack for a week. And I really injured my back at the end of that. And I remember thinking when I saw it, that probably wasn't worth it. But the people in heaven are really going to enjoy it.
I love that I dug that up for you. my co-answer, real answer, would be Pearl Harbor, the Michael Bay film.
Okay.
Because it's the second movie my wife and I ever saw. She wanted to watch it. We rented it on some streamer and watched it together and then talked for like hours afterwards and then made out. And that was kind of the beginning of the relationship for real. Also, if people see it in my casket, and don't know that story, they still think it's super funny. Like Paul did it to be ironic. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I win either way. I make my wife cry. I make my friends laugh. And I'm surrounded by puppies and babies going, who's next?
This guy's cool. What's your favorite film?
My favorite film of all time genuinely is It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay. Paul Waterhauser, I'm so grateful for your time and for doing this. Is there anything you want to tell people to look out for other than your live stand-up dates, which will be coming soon when you do a set with me?
Wow. Okay. Done and done, man. You can see me. I'm playing Hercules for Disney and Marvel coming up. I don't know. Have you heard about that? It's kind of an industry secret. It's not really out yet. I guess my other secret, but they, I guess they were recasting it because they said the guy they had was pretty problematic. Really funny, really good actor, really handsome, but just like shows up late all the time. And they're like, we need somebody who's going to be on time. And I'm like, dude, that's me. I'm your guy.
I certainly heard from Clint Eastwood that you were punctual. That was sort of all he had to say.
That was all he said. Punctual and really wiped out craft service. Really, really wiped out crafty. People can see me next year in a Netflix animated film, which I can't really talk about yet, but it's one of our greatest storytellers is involved, and I got to do a voice in it. I have a movie I did with Sydney Sweeney. She and I starred in a movie called National Anthem. That comes out next year. And I play a pivotal, strong supporting role in the TV series The After Party for Apple, which comes out next week.
With lovely, lovely Sam Richardson.
Yeah. So the cartoon's a dramedy, the movie's a drama, and the TV show is a comedy. So per usual, trying to give a little bit of everything. A little bit of everything.
God bless you, Paul Waterhauser. Thank you very much for doing this. Have a wonderful day.
God bless you.
Good day to you, sir.
So that was episode 226. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Paul. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and talk about the film that means the most to you and why. My neighbour Maureen loves reading them. It always makes her cry and she's very grateful for them. I hope you're all well. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Paul for giving me his time. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lytham for the photography. Come join me next week for another smasher of a guest. I hope you're all well. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.